This holiday, deck their countertops with peppermint white chocolate mochas, gingerbread lattes, and pumpkin cream cold brews. Ninja Luxe Cafe is the ultimate gift. It's the number one best-selling espresso machine in the U.S., perfect for the coffee lovers in your life. If they can dream it, they can brew it. No skills needed. Espresso balanced. Drip coffee, rich. Cold brew in a flash. Hands-free, silky microfoam. Dairy or plant-based milks. Bring joy into their holiday and every day after with Ninja Luxe Cafe. Shop now.
Think advertising on TikTok isn't for your business? Think again.
With TikTok ads, we went from 250,000 downloads to over 1 million downloads in less than a year.
I'm Eve.
I'm Anam, and we're the co-founders of Alinea.
Alinea Invest is an investing app for Gen Z.
We run 50 new ads per week with 3 variations thanks to TikTok Smart Plus campaigns. If you're not advertising on TikTok, you're missing out.
Drive more app downloads only on TikTok. Head over to getstarted.tiktok.com/TikTok ads.
Power Hour LSU.
PHL, extra little bit of swag, an extra little bit of taste.
Yeah. Man, I'm headed to the fair. Yeah. Terror of the tiger, I'ma always keep it real. Every team gon' get the power, it's the power. Power Hour. Power. LSU with Carter, it's the power. Power Hour. Power. LSU with Carter, man, I'm headed to the fair.
Let's freaking go. Folks, we got to talk about Brian Kelly's secret weapon. It is the single biggest question mark that I have going into next season for LSU. And it's something that we don't talk a whole lot about. It is punting. So we're going to start off with that a little bit later. John Eads of WAFB will join us, his first time on PHL. He has been at every practice, shot some great video, and he is going to give us an update on Xavion Thomas. He's been all over his rehab. So LSU is in an interesting punting position. I am in the middle. So I read from earlier today, Wilson Alexander, great reporter, nice guy at The Advocate, and he posted that the punting for LSU has been very inconsistent according to his views of practice, right? So LSU has two players that are vying for the punting position. It is Peyton Todd out of West Monroe, Louisiana. He has been at LSU for multiple seasons, and well, he's actually been at LSU for 3 seasons already. And then you have Blake Oschendorf, and the guy that's going to win this job is going to be Blake Oschendorf, all right? It is important to understand sometimes college football comes down to simple logic, all right? Blake Oschendorf actually tied with a few others, Callaway and Kamarion Pimpton, as some of the tallest players on the team. He is 6'7". You look historically, a lot of the LSU punters that are out there, they actually are very athletic guys. It's not your typical pudgy punter. Zach Van Rosenberg, of course, was a very good pitcher. And Avery Atkins is one of the most athletic LSU specialists ever. And he was obviously a really good punter here, more of a kickoff specialist. But Donnie Jones was pretty athletic. Obviously, one of the few fake punt touchdowns for 50 yards you'll ever see. And it was a touchdown at those refs by Brad Wing. So LSU has had very athletic punters, and Blake Oschendorf is certainly that. 6'7", 220. And I have watched some of his punts. They look fine to me. They look fine. His stats last year at Louisiana Tech was really good. And on top of that, he is old. Most of LSU's punters have been year 4, year 5, year 6 kind of guys. They take over the job at the elder stages of their career. So Blake Oschendorf, I am in. And the reason why this is very, very, very important, okay? LSU will not be as good as they were last year offensively. They just won't. That is simple logic. Jaden Daniels had arguably, statistically, the greatest college football season of all time. Now, I don't believe that. There's plenty that are in that conversation. But if we're looking just at raw numbers when he played, LSU averaged 7 yards per play in every game that they played. That is so unfreaking believably hard to do. And Jaden was still able to do it. And, you know, you don't have Malik, you don't have Brian Thomas Jr., you're breaking in a new center, so on and so on and so on. You guys know the story. So even if you think the LSU offense is going to be very good, even if you think the LSU offense is going to be a top 10 college football offense, they won't be the absolute best offense. It's probably not going to happen. So if that's the case, you're going to be punting the football more. And on top of that, the LSU defense is probably going to be better than what it was last year. I'm still very skeptical of this defense as a whole, even though it has been a huge week for them at practice. I am very pro Blake Blakier, as many of you know. But the defense is going to be at least better. It's going to be at least solider, okay? So if you're going to get more stops, the punt return game becomes bigger as well. So just in general, punting is huge. You have a really good deep snapper in Slade Roy, who just celebrated a birthday. Shout out to you, Slade. Big supporter here. But the bottom line is just simple. Blake Ochsendorf has got to be big this year for LSU. He just does. I do commend Brian Kelly as well for getting in the portal to go get someone. Now, who am I personally rooting for? Well, I don't know either, but I'm rooting for Peyton Todd because I'm always going to root for the Louisiana guy, especially someone who's been at the program for 3 seasons. All right. So this is a big, big, big deal. And Brian Kelly needs that punter to step up. Now, it is funny, and I've always enjoyed when this happens, okay? Sometimes it happens, sometimes it doesn't. I don't always agree with Brian Kelly, but I do at times see us having very similar takes, all right? I don't know if he watches the channel. I doubt he does. He's got way better things to do than watch me. But Brian Kelly said something interesting today about the team being more even. It's going to be a more balanced team overall. And that is the verbatim point I made earlier this year, okay, in week one, or I'd say in week one, on Monday, on Blake Ruffino's show, AYS, shout out to Blake. I made this exact point. He also pointed out that we need to be very good in close games. Obviously, last year, we didn't play as many close games as we did in 2020. We played quite a few, but not as many, okay? So the truth here is he's right. LSU games over the past couple of years have been chaotic. They have been very, very, very chaotic. In year one, it was chaos in that the games were clunky, a lot of close ones, a lot of crazy endings. Some games where we just played awfully on offense, but okay enough on defense to win. And then there was other games where we played awfully on defense, but okay enough on offense to win. And we had really bad special teams. It was a chaotic year, and somehow, some way, we're able to win the SEC West. Really good team, but a chaotic team, all right? We had one of the lowest win probability of any 10-win team in the modern era in college football. Then you have last season where you had another year of chaos. Your special teams got better, but offensively, you were all-time great. And defensively, compared to blue chip ratio and expectation, you were one of the worst defenses in college football history. So Brian Kelly made this point. I don't have the clip. I thought I had it pulled up on Twitter. He made this specific exact point. We are going to be more balanced. And I think in balance, he's talking about obviously run-pass ratio, actually running the football with the running backs. Didn't really need to do that last year because Jaden was Superman. But on top of that, you will just have a team that is just good to great in every category. And I think a major focus bringing in Slade Nagel to help with the special teams and just solidifying this coaching staff, Brian Kelly just wants a non-chaotic team, right? I don't mind playing close games. I really do not mind playing close games. College football is hard. Every SEC schedule is hard. The issue, though, is the chaotic nature of the close games that LSU has played over the past couple of seasons is just beyond comprehension, right? You know, offense is more important than defense, right? Well, in a few years ago, you won two games where you had less than 4 yards per play. You won two games where you had less than 100 yards passing, all right? And last year, you were in close games. I don't mind that you lost a close game to Ole Miss. I don't like the fact that you lost a close game to Ole Miss 55-49 or whatever the hell it was. I try to forget that game. So those games are just abnormal. Like, and LSU games have always been wacky, right? I think BK just wants a more solid team across the board, if that makes sense. Is my resolution fuzzy? Good to see you, Mick. Am I fuzzy? Type Y for yes, type N for no. I could give it a quick look see here. Let's see. Am I fuzzy? I look clear as hell. I mean, I look like one of these Clearasol ads, right? Now, I want to shout out a supporter, a pretty new supporter, joined our Patreon. He's loving all the extra exclusive analysis on Patreon. Move number 99 to tight end if he can't punt, says Jared. We say hi to Cole. CT99 was first in the chat tonight. Dante, L.A. Ma. Good to see you. All right. I want to go to Harry. And this is going to be a very... Oh, thank you for the punch.
You're welcome.
Thank you for the punch. Hey, don't like being on the thing no more.
No, I don't.
She's... Yeah, I'm telling you, it's one of the saddest things when Booger passed. When Booger... And Haley's like still happy we got a great new dog, whatever. But when Booger passed, Booger guaranteed that my beautiful wife would be on the show every single night. And I know a lot of you miss Booger. R.I.P. Booger. But our other dog is just too bad. She's a devil dog. Okay? Let me show you, for those that didn't know Booger, RIP to our baby. I'm getting emotional. Now, let's have a conversation here about this. Is it too aggressive? Missouri gave up a lot of 20-plus yard plays last year. Can we get away with that aggressive man coverage type of defense against Lincoln Riley? All right. So I love these kinds of questions, and I appreciate it. And you posted this in the Discord, and I don't know why y'all don't join the Patreon just to be a part of our absolutely insane Discord chats. It is great. We have a data analyst in there that does some charts for us. It's awesome. I guarantee it. Just ask anyone that's in there. And during the season, it gets even better. Okay? And you're helping feed my family, which is very important. Because I don't like being hungry. All right. So what we're going to do here is I'm going to pull up 2023 Missouri schedule because I've seen a few Missouri fans make this point, all right, that LSU or Missouri gave up a lot of explosive plays. And guess what? That is indeed true. They did give up a lot despite having a really good secondary. However, who were the offenses, right? Who were those offenses? College football is a sport of very small sample. And you take a look at these offenses, a lot of them make sense that you gave up explosive pass plays. Kansas State, their quarterback is now the starter at Ohio State. They had a second-round tight end a really solid offensive line, really good skill position players. All right. Memphis the following weekend, yeah, they're okay. But then as you move along here, you give up explosive plays to LSU. Well, Jaden did that on everyone. You give up explosive plays to Kentucky. Well, Kentucky has Berrien Brown. He's probably the fastest receiver in college football. You gave up explosive plays to South Carolina. South Carolina had the best pure downfield non-first-round wide receiver in Xavier Leggett, and they had Spencer Rattler, all right, who might start as a rookie this year. Bye week. Then they played Carson Beck in Georgia. Then the week after that, they played Tennessee, and Tennessee hit some big plays, but they only scored 7 points. Tennessee, obviously, really explosive offense. Then they played Florida. And this was the only...
This holiday, deck their countertops with peppermint white chocolate mochas, gingerbread lattes, and pumpkin cream cold brews. Ninja Luxe Cafe is the ultimate gift. It's the number one best-selling espresso machine in the U.S. Perfect for the coffee lovers in your life. If they can dream it, they can brew it. No skills needed. Espresso balanced. Drip coffee, rich. Cold brew in a flash. Hands-free, silky microfoam. Dairy or plant-based milks. Bring joy into their holiday and every day after with Ninja Lux Cafe. Shop now.
Bad game that Blake Baker had in two seasons. I have made this point plenty of times. When you adjust for who he was going up against, Blake Baker only had one bad game as a defense coordinator, and it was this one versus Florida. That's it. All the other ones made sense. Okay, and he got lucky that he didn't have to play Marvin Harrison and Ohio State's best players because they opted out. So, and they shut down Arkansas because they're terrible. So, yeah, Blake Baker gave up a lot of big plays, all right? Gave up a lot of big plays. But the defense overall was good. Missouri's red zone efficiency is one of the best in college football history. They scored every single time when they were in the red zone last year. Perfect 100% versus Power 5 competition. And defensively, they were pretty good there as well, okay? Now, you take a look at what you just saw, and now you take a look at this schedule. Okay, USC, really good offense. But after USC, you don't play an elite offense until Ole Miss. You don't. And even though there's a lot of hopeful quarterbacks that are on this schedule, and there's a lot of really, really good skill position guys on this schedule, almost every single one of these SEC teams really, really got destroyed when it comes to their skill guys being transferred out or whatever. Alabama lost their best receiver and tight end. Texas A&M lost their best receiver. Arkansas lost everyone. South Carolina lost Spencer Rattler. USC doesn't have Caleb Williams. Oklahoma knew everything. Florida returns a good bit, but they're Florida. And you get Vanderbilt and so on and so on. So it's interesting. Now, him and DeAnta Lynn, I actually like Lynn's defense a lot. I really, really, really do. Now, did he have a lot of studs on that defense last year? He did. But yeah, DeAnta Lynn's could be pretty good. And we'll talk more about him. Next week, we'll start doing more USC-specific breakdowns of what I think they're going to do. Okay. Bullfrog, you know the history of Bullfrog. You could be the same Bullfrog. He had a green letter. But for those that don't know, Bullfrog's not a troll. There was a guy who his name was Bullfrog. And he accused me and Brian Kelly of being racist because we were Jaden Daniels supporters. And he just destroyed all of my Jaden Daniels praise and support. But the truth here is, as much as I love Jaden Daniels, all right, and as much as I'm pro LSU, I am always going to give you honesty. right? I'm never just going to sit here and tell you a player is just downright terrible, because that's just too harsh. Players watch, players' parents watch, particularly the players' parents watch. So I try not to be too critical. But at the time, like, Jaden had some bad games, and I called it like it is on here, on Twitter, and all of that. But there were some that thought I had some agenda keeping pushing Jaden Daniels. Why do you like Jaden Daniels so much? Well, turned out I was right. Okay? Turned out I was right. Was I open to Garrett Nussmeier at times? Sure. Because Jaden was not playing well. But he wasn't turning the football over. He was winning his games. And he'll take it. Quarterback's really hard. So, you know, So Bullfrog trolled me on that, and trolled me on my Ricky Collins prediction to LSU, and it was tough. And we've had a lot of trolls recently. I don't know why. I guess it's closer to the season. But I don't think okay, you're Corey Rogers. All right. I don't think I ever blocked you. You used to be on your – I think you used to comment on your wife's name. Huh? I remember that. But I want to follow up here with Chance. And Chance, I am shipping your Charles Alexander card out tomorrow. I haven't been able to check my email because I'm really busy with the NFL channel and doing my ointments and stuff like that. I'll be real with you, man. This is a really good point as well. So, what I like to do as I've grown older, or as I've tried to grow as a thinker or content creator or whatever, I try my best to not just focus on what happened, but why and how did it happen, okay? And the truth is, when you normally think of bad defenses, you think of bombs being thrown over your head. That's what you normally think of, like deep passes, especially now. But the truth was, LSU's defense was rarely beat over the top. In fact, 2022's defense had some over-the-top vertical issues. Now, once again, a lot of those were against really, really, really elite quarterbacks. But They did. And last year, okay, last year, the LSU defense wasn't the absolute worst at that. Were there times where they had beat over the top? Yes. But the issue was they would get run through, which is even worse. It's way worse, because what makes being run through, I was going to make a joke, but I'm not going to. But what makes being run through worse is that when you give up like a 50-yard deep throwing touchdown, is it sometimes a jump ball type of situation where Brian Thomas Jr. is making a ridiculous catch? Yes. But a lot of times a deep ball touchdown is just one person blowing a coverage or something along those lines. Okay? But when you're getting run through, that means it's a gang tackling issue. You can't tackle. You're giving up too much underneath space, right? Which should never happen either. All right, a lot of runs right up the gut. I still have nightmares of that Georgia State run. So we've got to, absolutely positively got to, make sure that that doesn't happen. So how do you combat that? Well, you got to be aggressive. And you also, on the other end of it, you also have to be ready for when they are peppering you underneath to tackle. while at the same time being a little bit more forthcoming that you're going to give up a 40 and 50 yard bomb from time to time. Okay. They will not do what 2020 did. If that does happen, now we might get lit up, but we won't. Once again, USC's probably going to put up some points on us. But as long as we are trying and we're mixing things up and we're making things difficult, yeah, and you're right, Amicat. You're right. You're right. But like I said at the time, let's be real here. Jaden was still winning us games. And you did see some signs of getting better. And one thing that if you actually go back and listen to a lot of the Jaden interviews before 2023, this is something I'm going to be doing, listening to quarterbacks really closely when they give interviews. The quarterbacks that I am going to trust more when it comes to taking a leap are the ones that acknowledge their weaknesses in interviews. I cannot recount how many interviews Jaden Daniels did last year before the season where all he was basically saying was, I've got to get better at throwing the football down the field. Mike Denbrock said it publicly. Brian Kelly said it publicly. And Jaden Daniels said the same thing every single interview. I'm going to be better throwing the football down the field. I'm going to be better throwing the football down the field. And what happens? Well, he had arguably the best deep ball throwing season we have ever seen. And what's happening in the NFL right now? His only deep pass in an actual game was an absolute dime piece. I mean, prime Halle Berry dime piece. Prime Eva Longoria dime piece. Prime Rihanna in her Fenty lingerie dime pieces. That's what Jaden was doing. Prime. Prime Topanga on Boy Meets World dimes. Prime Selma Hayek 20 years ago. And still today, dimes. I don't know. I'm trying to think of a deeper cut dime. Oh, prime Doughy. I butchered that. Prime Zoe Deschanel singing Baby It's Cold Outside on Elf level dime. We're trying to get our guest's camera to work. It says device not connected. John, if you can hear me. I'm going to keep naming dimes until he fixes his camera. So this is on John. Well, who's another deep cut dime? Tara Reid?
Cole goes, Tara Reid?
I'm trying to remember Tara Reid. By the way, my thoughts go out to Robert Griffin III. He got fired today by ESPN. I'll say this. Do I hate this? I do. RG3 is a perfect media member. He is very different, okay? And, you know, He said what he said last year about Michael Penix. Then he interviewed Jaden Daniels and changed his vote or whatever. And he and I got into it on Twitter. I was trying to get him on the show and put him in a body bag on Twitter. But, look, I didn't want him to get fired, though. Is it the end of the world? No, he's got 1,000 other podcasts and happily married and a ton of money. So I feel worse for when, like, actual people that need the job get fired. But he was the perfect amount of original, corny, and controversial all mixed into one. And I hate using the word corny because it is a negative connotation because I'm corny. Like this dime thing I've been doing is corny as hell. Corny as hell. So, I know some of you are excited. I'll never get over the, you know, he said the, he made the national broadcast reference on about Jesus. I wouldn't have done that. And I just wouldn't do that on a national. If you're doing that on like Kill Tony or something like that, sure. But not on a national broadcast where college football fans are watching. He shouldn't have done that. And then he took that croissant picture. Okay. How many of you would have taken this photo? I mean, come on now, bro. Like, I don't mind the content, but man, and it is kind of funny. It's not why he got fired, by the way. This photo isn't why he got fired. Okay. So D-Pain, you believe it. That's not why you got canned. So. I didn't mind the corniness on the broadcast. I didn't. I really didn't. Once again, I wouldn't. Like, I honestly don't mind religious references in any medium. I just wouldn't have said the thing that he said. I just wouldn't have. But overall, he's solid. I thought his interview with Tyrann Mathieu a few months ago was really good, too. Now, should you pile on RG3? Yeah, I know a lot of you are pissed because you felt Tyrann Mathieu deserved that Heisman and whatever, the Jaden stuff. But so chance to talk about Sam Ponder getting fired. I saw that as well. So for those that don't know, Sam Ponder was NFL Countdown and really talented broadcaster. You know, the hard thing about those presenter roles is Susie Colbert got fired. You know, freaking Susie Colbert. Do you know how freaking legendary Susie freaking Colbert is? We're going to talk to a television broadcaster here in a second, Mr. John Eads. He's got his camera fixed. Susie Colbert got canned. Once she gets fired, everyone is up for debate. So, Now, coming up next, you guys know I've kind of been labeled the Xavion Thomas guy. This guy has watched more Xavion Thomas at practice than anyone else. I don't know Xavion. I know quite a few players on this year's team. I do not know Xavion Thomas. I don't think he's really that good. But hamstring issues. We'll hear from the man who's been all over it next. Home is where the heart is, and our friends at NOPOD Roofing really takes that to heart. 504-810-8744. Give them a call today for all of your roofing needs. And one of my favorite things about NOPOD Roofing is their versatility. They not only do roofing, they do siding, they do painting, they do tree removal, fencing, anything home improvement. Our friends at NOPOD will get you straight. Give them a call today at 504-810-8744 and let them know PHL and Carter the Power sent you. We never overpromise and always overdeliver with NOPOD, baby. Let's go.
I think joy and happiness and doing things you like is important.
My favorite thing is sports cards. When I'm not on YouTube, I am building my collection. And when I started, I wish there was a sports card strategy show.
He wasn't necessarily going to be a first round pick before all this Heisman buzz. Now they're talking about him being a top five pick.
Paul Hickey and the team at nooffseason.com personally helped build my Jaden Daniels collection, and they're looking to do the same for you. Just check them out on social media or nooffseason.com. All right, he's a man of many talents. His name is John Eads of WAFB. The man had to follow the legendary Steve Schneider. He's not the sports director, John, but I love Steve Schneider. He was just probably the nicest media member you ever meet. And also that Jack Doucet guy's pretty great guy as well. We say hi to John. What's going on, buddy?
Hey, sorry about that. I think my computer forgot that it has a camera because I'd be trying to pull up the camera and it says you don't have a camera connected. And I was like, what do you mean? There's a camera in the laptop, you know? So not a good look for me, a guy that works in television and can't even figure out how to get on.
Hey, you got young boy in the background. We're all in on it, Davey. So Xavion Thomas, you've gotten a lot of good camera shots. You've watched his process unfold here. How has he looked to you, and do you feel he's getting closer to full strength?
Yeah, he's looked good. Spring game, of course, he had a touchdown there. Came in, made an immediate impact. Sometimes with those transfers, you wonder, you know, they're going to need some time to get acclimated, right? But for him to come out there in April, believe the game, whatever it was, and score a touchdown and make some big plays like that, just kind of proves that he was an immediate impact guy. Like, he made things happen at Mississippi State. He was a freshman All-American for special teams, a punt returner, whatever. So he's always had that big play dynamic. You just wondered if he would, you know, carry that over to LSU and would have the opportunities and the chances to do that. And he has so far. Now, he has looked good every time I've seen him. So it was confusing to me when one day last week we went and he was off to the side with the trainers, right? That same week, earlier in the week, we walked in when the media was allowed to, you know, go in and see practice, and he was with the trainer getting something wrapped up, and that was the beginning of the whole week of him being off to the side, doing his own thing, which I thought was interesting to capture, you know, because I didn't see or hear of anything injury-wise, but I guess it, you know, must have happened when we weren't there. With that said, though, I got my notes here. He's been back full go this week.
Let's
go. First day on Monday, I wrote down that he, what did he do? He burned, I believe it was J.K. Johnson on a go route there in some 7-on-7 skill stuff, whatever it was. So, yeah, he's back. He's been in the team drills. He's been in the 7-on-7. He's been in the 11-on-11. He burned another guy in a 1-on-1 drill that we got to actually record the other day. So he's a really – he's a technician in route running. He's got the athletic ability. It reminds me a lot of Aaron Anderson. You know, he wears one, Xavion zero. Those two kind of complement each other. Of course, they both take reps at punt returner. So I almost feel like the best between the two of them is going to get the bulk of the playing time.
Garrett Nussmeier has looked what to you?
To me, he's looked good. Like, he's in control. He's in command. He's on time. He's got chemistry with his guys. With that said, though, I've also seen some 7-on-7 and 11-on-11 against the starting defense where the offense has struggled to move the ball. You know, he's going to his second, third, and fourth read, which is good. You want him going through his progressions and not forcing things, but he's checking the ball down a lot, which isn't necessarily a bad thing because I asked Harold Perkins this question. I didn't get a great answer. But every time I've seen Caleb Jackson and Caden Durham and Josh Williams catch the ball in space, they've been able to take it upfield for 5, 10, 15 yards. Caleb can obviously run a dude over. Doesn't matter how big he is. And I feel like they didn't have that element last year. You know, Logan Diggs was a solid running back. He didn't really bring that receiving element to the offense, though, to me. So I feel like that's going to open things up. So back to Nuss, checking down is not a bad thing, but maybe I want to see him be a little bit more comfortable moving the ball. He certainly had his moments where he's made some tight window throws that are very difficult. Kamorian Pimpton had a moss catch in the back corner of the end zone the other day. Obviously, there's no pressure in these one-on-one situations when they're doing that kind of thing. But right where it needed to be, he's familiar with Pimpton, where he wants the ball, where he wants to catch it. So I just think the biggest thing for Nuss is he's in command, he's in control, he's doing all the right things. Maybe what I'd like to see more in the next couple of weeks when we can go and watch practice is in those 7-on-7, 11-on-11s, get some more big chunks, you know, 10, 15 yards, and maybe not checking it down as much.
John Eads, WAFB, joining us. You said in one of your practice reports that the LSU defense has been mixing some, you know, nickel dimes and all of that. And there was a session where it was a newer, like, defensive personnel. I think you said something along those lines. Give us an idea of what that looked like. I'm guessing you got pretty good football knowledge. So what did that unit look like? And do you think we could see more of that?
Yeah, I wrote it down right here, actually. Kind of what they did is they went over this. They walked through it, their nickel set. And then they took that immediately over to the other field and used it against LSU's starting offense. And it worked. Like, they forced a 3-and-out. They were getting their hands on the ball. They were covering well. I don't think LSU completed a pass nor picked up a first down in that segment right after they installed that nickel defense. And here's who's in it. Savion Jones, Parrish Shand on the inside. And then you had Sage and JK at the corner spots. I think Ashton Stamps was – I was talking to Blake Ruffino, who you obviously know. I think he said that he was dealing with a little something on that particular day, so Stamps would be in for JK Johnson there. Jordan Allen, Jordan Gilbert at safety. Jair Brown, that's the guy that's been playing nickel corner. And that was a little bit of a surprise to me because he's a guy that transferred in, had played a little bit at Ohio State. But P.J. Woodland was the guy that we were really talking about all spring, right, as the guy that was making the plays at corner. And it feels like he's not falling off, but we're not talking about him as much. And Jair Brown has taken that nickel spot. He's done well in those situations. Something else, Whit Weeks is in on that nickel set. It's not Greg Penn. They bring Whit in alongside Perk. They put Major up on the line of scrimmage. And they have Jones and Shand with their hands in the dirt in the defensive line. So I think what they're trying to do is get some pressure, get their best pass rushers on the field, mix things up, disguise things at the line of scrimmage, and then put their best corner and coverage guys on the field. And as I said, it worked against LSU's offense.
Brian Kelly press conferences. All right. I used to do the weekly press conference thing during the Miles era, so that ages me. I'm guessing what, you're probably early, mid-20s, I'm guessing?
Yeah, 23.
So what is it like going to a Brian Kelly press conference? Because I'm sure you've been in other press conference rooms. I understand questions can get repetitive and all of that. But walk us through what it's like for you to sit in on his presser. Do you feel he's more honest and thoughtful than some of the other teams and coaches that you might have covered?
I do. You know, I think it's a little different this time of year than when we go on – you know, maybe a Monday morning during the season or a Thursday afternoon, because I don't know, you don't get a ton out of him on Thursday before the game. You know, sometimes I'll walk in there and I've scouted the team they're playing against. I know everything about all the opposing, you know, playmakers. And I try to ask him, you know, how do you do this? How do you do that? What's dangerous about him and this and that? And you don't get a ton, which I understand. They don't want to leak literally anything that could possibly sway the game. Not that that would happen, but you know how it is. But this time of year, he's really thoughtful. Like, he walks up there and he gives like a 3-minute monologue about whatever, And for us, you know, we're clipping these for television purposes. And most of the time, that 3 minutes, you can find some very useful and meaningful phrases to use that, you know, will get people's attention and have a deeper meaning to them. And then when you ask him questions, this time of year, he goes very in-depth. You know, you ask him two, he's going to remember what both were. He's going to give you two and a half minute answers, very deep, detailed. And I liked one the other day about Kamori and Pimpton when he got into doing the dirty jobs, right? And they weren't so sure that when Pimpton got there, he would want to do those things. And what he means, of course, is like blocking and getting in the trenches and you know, that kind of thing. I thought that was a very good answer. I like when he goes in depth and tells us some of that inside intel and doesn't give us all the coach speak. There's nothing I hate more than when coaches and players get up there and just kind of give a cliche, because I get sick of those. You hear them all the time. Whenever I'm doing anything, sharing anything with the audience, I like to give them something that they have not heard before and is unique.
Yeah. So what's funny about that, John, and obviously we just met, I always say that if you listen closely to a Brian Kelly press conference, sometimes you have to put multiple press conferences together.
Yeah.
You don't get intel. You can, you got to really listen, because, you know, he does have a tendency to have longer answers, but it actually gives you some specificity. And I wanted you to back, I asked that question hoping you were going to say something along those lines. So I appreciate you giving us your insight. You know, as we draw closer to USC, is there any injury thing? I see some people asking of Jelani Watkins. Is there any injury news that you think is relevant?
Yeah, well, I saw Jelani when he got hurt. I actually got it on video. PJ Woodland knocked down a pass that was overthrown a little bit, and then he landed right on his heel as they were coming to the ground. What Brian Kelly said is that it's just a soft tissue thing, so he should be back and practicing quickly, probably in a week or two.
But there's nothing that's happened up to this point that has anyone just out for the season.
No, not that I'm aware of. Jacoby and Guillory on Tuesday was sidelined for most of practice. I think it was a hamstring. He was on the bed with the trainer. He was on the bike. He wasn't doing any team drills, but he was back at practice on Wednesday. It's hard to keep track of the days, but he was back He was in the team drills. He was starting in there. He even almost got in a fight. You know, he was so riled up on that mindset day, as those guys call it. There's the video of Watkins getting hurt right there. So, yeah, just landed right on his heel. But nothing serious there. And then, yeah, Guillory was back at practice. I think a lot of people were worried about that. It didn't look good when we left. You know, he was very slow, lethargic, just kind of on the bike going 2 miles an hour. But he was back full go the next day. Gio Paez missed a practice. I think it was earlier this week, or maybe it was the end of last week, the weekend. But he was back. I'm not really sure why he missed the practice, but he was back in there. He was back with the starters and stuff. And then you've probably talked about this. There were a couple guys that had to finish some class things. Braden Swenson had to graduate and finish Spanish. But he's back, and he's immediately taken Deshaun Womack's spot as a starting defensive end, which, you know, it is a good thing. I know a lot of people are excited about Womack. He's going to be in the rotation. But Swenson played a lot last year, and he brings a lot to the table. He's looked good.
So I wanted to I always like my audience to meet the guest. I found this to be interesting, man. Like, and look, you're rocking this. This is a tight ass shirt, John.
I promise it's a large.
Dude, look at you, man. You're bowed out, bro.
Well, I showed up to this thing, and the guy told me he would, Coach Brody's his name, he said he would give me some swag for the thing I was filming at.
Oh, okay.
And I told him a large would work, and then I put it on. I was like, oh, maybe a large doesn't work. But appreciate that. Yeah, I've been bulking up, even though it's the summer, which doesn't make a lot of sense. I wish I had done this more when I actually could play, but, I'm hoping I still got my grad year. You know, maybe Coach Kelly needs a star, you know?
I mean, let's go. Yeah. I like it, man. I'm trying to eat better. I'm trying to look better. I'm trying to get jacked like you. When I played sports, I wasn't a great athlete. I just had to know about the sport and hope I could make it. I also want to shout you out because I have filmed games from the sideline. I have a small-ish television background. Mm. It's hard as hell. And I'm guessing you film LSU games from the sideline.
I have. I had a different kind of job at this time last year.
But are you doing it this year?
Not this year.
Okay, perfect.
Yeah, I wish I was. I would love to. I love shooting football. But Darren DeQuano does it for our station. He's been shooting football.
Oh, yeah, I know Darren. Yeah, very
good. You know him. He's a beast. He's been shooting for years. I would love to do it. I did a little bit of it last year when I was kind of more in a news role and Steve was still working with us.
Yeah, Steve Schneider, great guy.
Yeah, absolutely. Just trying to, you know, follow him up is a very tough deal to keep the standard going. But what I
want people to understand is it's hard. I've had people ask, what's it like being on the field? Is it great? Yes. The first time you do it, it's great. But once you get used to it, it's hard. It's crowded. Mm-hmm. At LSU, you got to be on your knees.
Yep.
You do. It's not like that everywhere.
Yeah.
And what I want anyone to do, I know we used to do it with the iPhone. Just grab like any kind of grab a stool. Basically, that's what's on your shoulder.
Yeah,
the thing is heavy as hell. Just grab a stool and just see how still you can be. So you did pretty good, John. When I did the journalism thing, I did not have a steady shoulder.
Yeah.
Who has the steadiest shoulder when it comes to filming in the Baton Rouge media? Let's hear it.
Oh, man.
Or no. In LSU media, it could be someone outside.
Okay. Well, the nice thing is that when people are moving in the frame, everybody's moving. Nobody can hold the camera.
Right.
But you don't notice it. So that's the nice thing. Who has the steadiest shots? I mean, I'm going to be biased because I don't watch a ton of the other channels. I hardly have time to watch our channel. I was too busy, like, you know, working on things and stuff. I don't know. I mean, I got to go with my guy, Darren. I mean.
Yeah, Darren. Okay.
Yeah, I'm going with my guy.
You know, I could rock with it.
Yeah.
If you ever watch, I think this guy is, and people are probably so tuned out on this, but I'm a media nerd.
Yeah.
Seth Lewis.
I know Seth.
Seth's a really good friend of mine. I went to LSU together.
Okay.
Seth has a steady ass shoulder.
Okay. Okay.
But he could be in the middle of a freaking earthquake.
Yeah.
And freaking have that thing still. And Seth Lewis was the first TV reporter to get the pitch invader from the Southern game. That was before. Oh, do you not know this?
No.
Okay, so when did you get to Baton Rouge? When did you start?
Last July.
Okay.
Yeah.
So I won't play it now, but there was a guy, there was a kid high or whatever, and he just walked on the field. He was just.
Oh, okay.
It was probably the most viral LSU thing in 2022, okay, outside of the Mason Taylor touchdown.
Yeah.
But yeah, Seth Lewis has the steadiest shoulder. But yeah, I want people to understand how hard this stuff is. Local TV, I couldn't do it. I've never really had like a local TV job. I'm so glad I didn't do it. So you, on the other hand, you're younger, you're able to do it, but is it hard doing this job?
In terms of shooting or just the whole thing?
It's the whole thing. Because you work long hours, you're younger, so you're probably not, you're obviously not going to make what Jacques or Cobble or
something. Yeah, I always joke with Jacques about that.
Yeah, I mean, and he should be getting paid at least six figures because, I mean, he is that guy. Yeah. But I love Jacques Doucet. He knows that.
Mm-hmm.
But What is it like being a TV reporter? Because there are LSU fans that want your job. They want to be like, oh, I want to go to practice every single day.
Yeah, sure.
But John, it's hard as hell. So walk us through, like, for a practice day, what goes through your day?
Well, really, it's as hard as you want to make it. You know, typically you work 5 days a week, just kind of like any other job. Usually, you get 2 days off. Usually, our primary responsibilities are we have two big shows we do on the news, the 6 and the 10, of course. So, you know, we'll anchor the sports segment of those, which, you know, is like 3.5, 4, sometimes 5 minutes of content. But even though it's only 4 minutes, it takes about 4 hours to put it all together, believe it or not. Personally, I work every day, every week, even if I'm off on the schedule. In terms of LSU, that's Shock's thing. He's been doing it for years. But like you said, a lot of people would love to have these opportunities to go to practice, to go film practice, to go interview players and stuff. So I take advantage of every opportunity I can because I know other people would love to do it. So I go to every practice. I go to every availability that's possible to film, even if it's not my primary responsibility. And then when I'm not doing that, you know, I'm at home going through our high school footage and making mixtapes and listening back to things or creating my own content, or going to shoot my own interviews. So I'm 23. I'm not married. I don't have any pets.
Oh, you don't have a dog?
No, I don't. I couldn't. As much as I would love one, I couldn't fit it into my schedule. So I just grind nonstop all day while I can, because I know at some point I'm not going to be able to do that. You don't have to do all that extra stuff, but that's just what I enjoy doing. That's how I feel like you got to, you know, build your brand, find your niche. So that's what we're doing.
Yeah. I actually got approached by a TV station last year. And I was like, as long as I don't have to do what a normal, like what you have to do, I cannot stress enough how many moving parts are there. Your tape can mess up. Your camera can mess up. Your bosses. I mean, there's so many different things. So I wanted people to also see that because they never actually get to hear that side of it. Before we let you go, your overall feeling about LSU next year, do you feel this is a 9-ish, 10-ish win type of season?
I do. You know, I think the defense is going to be better. They can't get worse. So, you know, this is what it was last year, right? It was an imbalance. There we go. I think it's going to be a little more level this year. I think the offense is going to regress a little bit. The defense will get better. They're playing a tough schedule. So I think it is a 9-10 win team. You know, last year I kind of jumped on the hype, you know, was new here, all that. Like, they're going to go 11-1. They almost did. You know, they certainly could have if a few things go the other way, you know, in the Alabama game, the Ole Miss game specifically. But I don't think 9 or 10 wins really matters this year because the playoffs expanded. And if you win the games you need to win, your resume is strong enough, you can get into the playoffs. So I get a different vibe from this team. I love the coaching. Love Bo Davis. Love Kevin Peoples. Love Blake Baker. Obviously, the offensive guys, nothing needs to be said about them. They're the same guys from last year. They're doing their thing. Just think there's a different energy than there was maybe last year. You know, the coaching staff is more in tune and connected with the players. I think they're going to get the most, like a sponge, right? You're squeezing a sponge. They're going to get the most out of this team they possibly can. And I think what they will get out of it is a 10-win season with definitely an opportunity to maybe compete for the SEC title game and sneak into that college football playoff.
John, please tell Jacques I said hello. Please. Keep your head down. It's insane. I sometimes wonder if I could have at least done it once. But the thing is, John is very young, so you've got to help build his following. Give him a follow. John Eads. No, it's only one E in John or in Eads. AFB. John, we will have you on pretty soon again. We really appreciate it, brother.
Of course. Thanks for having me. Excited for the next couple weeks, and should be a fun season, man.
There we go. Let's go. All right. His name's John Eads. I like people that self-deprecate. So when he jumped on the channel, he was like, how come me, the camera guy who knows more about cameras than any guest you could possibly have outside of, you know, like Ken Burns or someone like that, he was probably wondering, why is this happening to me of all people? Mike Jordan out of the woodworks, he said, it's good. Swaggy Johnny with my man NBA young boy. Now, in the next 10 to 15, I'll answer as many questions as we possibly can. If you do Super Chat, we'll keep it going. Now, sometimes on Thursdays, we can go very long. Very long. but I'm not going to do so tonight. I need your thoughts, your prayers. I referenced this earlier this week. My health is getting better. I don't scratch as much. I still got to put a bunch of ointments and stuff like that on. I have another doctor's appointment tomorrow. Hopefully all this stuff is cleared up. Okay. However, I did have something really tragic happen to someone close to me. I mean, beyond tragic. And it honestly has given me nightmares every single night. It is the scariest, craziest thing I've ever heard in my life, too. I'm big on that. I won't go into specifics, but please pray for my mental well-being. It's been a wild jaw on the floor type of week for me personally. I am really glad this did not happen in week one for the college football season. Okay. So I want to talk about, I'm not going to play it because I don't have full enough. Like, I don't feel comfortable playing this full clip. I'll show a little bit of it, okay? First thing, I do want to shout out Chad Ochocinco showing some love to Jaden. This photo is the definition of aura, as the kids say. Super excited for Jaden to, you know, live these dreams of his. And shout out to Chad. Now, as you see in the background, not going to play the audio. Prime documentary coming out on Prime. It was produced by Shaquille O'Neal. As you can see, Livy Dunn, Angel Reese, Jaden Daniels, Flage, and a few other athletes. And Livy Dunn. I wish that they put a baseball player on there. I do think a baseball player would have been nice for recruiting. And there might be, I might be wrong on that. There might be an LSU baseball player in this. Let me get this confirmed. I saw a men's basketball player. Okay. Let me get this confirmed. Okay. No, there is not a baseball player. Coming out on September 30th, I will be watching this documentary. On Prime Video, The Money Game. I know recruits watch, and that's fine. Why would you go to another school not named LSU? Why? And the craziest thing about this is there's a gazillion other stars that they could have put on there. Malik Nabers, star. Paul Skeens, Dylan Cruz could have been in this. LSU's not always going to be the highest bidder. They're not always going to be the highest bidder. But I'm telling you, those letters mean something. And I know you're sounds like propaganda. I get no money from LSU. None directly from LSU Athletics. Zero. But y'all, why wouldn't you go to LSU? Just asking a simple question. Why wouldn't you do it? Why wouldn't you do it? The master blaster. How far can I punt and kick it today? I don't know. But yeah, one day I might share what actually happens, but it's not. It's honestly just not worth it, because I don't want you to have nightmares about this. Pretty well. The truth, though, is like there are a lot of LSU athletes that have a bigger celebrity compared to their relative talent level. Okay. There are a lot of athletes that are like that that went to LSU. A lot. Perfect example. Perfect example. The most famous wide receiver of the past decade is Odell Beckham Jr. He is the most famous. Now, is he the best? No. Is he a top 10 receiver of the past decade? Probably yes-ish and probably no-ish. But he's a freaking star. Superstar. All right. Was Ryan Clark a Hall of Famer? No. He's probably the biggest rising NFL media member working right now. Same thing with Swagoo. Very elite LSU player, good pro. At LSU, there is an extra equity you get just by going to the school and just being good. Okay? So, sure, I'm not saying you can't go be famous in Alabama or Oregon or Auburn or whatever, but I want you to be honest. How many, like, game-shifting cultural athletes have come from Alabama? I'm not saying good, but I'm talking about dudes with real aura, superstardom in any sport, really. They mostly come from LSU. There is a star power that comes along with it. Okay. Pegasus says he still believes Odell Beckham's the most talented wide receiver to come through here in the past decade. That's obviously very fair. That's obviously very fair. I guess at this point, if we're talking about peaks, you know, Justin Jefferson has probably hit the highest peak. I would say Justin Jefferson has hit a higher peak as a wide receiver than Odell, but that's really close. Odell at his absolute peak. It's really close. Don't go crying to your mama. Now, Joe Namath and Kenny Stabler, sure. Yeah, no, those are icons. Let me see. You know, one thing is it's interesting, and let's just say you were tuning in for the first time tonight. So we get into like other subjects, just whatever stream of consciousness sports stuff. I do believe that this rookie NFL quarterback class is the best one that they've had since 2020. And I'm doing film studies on a lot of them. I'll do a Drake May one probably in the morning. But, you know, I just, one thing that drives you crazy is when people just say stuff just to say it in the comment section. And the most controversial video that I did was one where I was talking about Joe Milton isn't really that good. He had a really good preseason game, but I broke down the film showing what actually happened. And boy, did they crush me. They crushed me when I said Drake May is so much better. Y'all, I watched some of the Drake May throws before I came on here. He is so damn gifted. He is so, so, so gifted. And I was really high on this QB class. The only one I was just like out on was Michael Penix, but he's looked decent up to this point. Y'all, Bo Nix with Sean Payton's going to work. It might not win a whole lot, but it's going to work. It's a tough division. Jaden Daniels, we know what Jaden's going to do. I could make a case that his supporting cast is the worst. I think most would say the Patriots have the worst supporting cast. I don't see how Caleb Williams is just terrible. I just don't. Let me see. All right. Here's one from Ryan. Send me an IG message. He says, Carter, your thoughts on Brian Thomas Jr. and Malik Nabers? Now, since we're on the subject. I appreciate it, John. I'd rather you know, comment in the Ryan, excuse me. BTJ Malik Nabers. Kind of lost my thought. I'd gotten another Facebook messages. Okay. Let's see. BTJ Malik Nabers. His question is, who do I think is going to have a better season? Because obviously BTJ is in great spot. Jacksonville is honestly a really, really, really good landing spot. Honestly, BTJ has the perfect landing spot. Kind of a quiet guy. He goes to one of the smaller market teams. And he's got a really good mentor in Gabe Davis, who is a vertical guy. BTJ is going to be way better than Gabe Davis, but that's a good mentor who's experienced. And they have all these underneath options. So BTJ can just do what he does, which is line him up out wide, and he's going to cook. Now, he could play the slot. He can, but you want him on the outside. And if it doesn't work out, they have other receivers, so it works out really nicely for him. Malik Nabers is not the case. So he has a small injury. They're still trying to figure out this jersey number situation. He doesn't have a great quarterback. No freaking Saquon. We'll see what their defense is. Malik is under a lot of pressure. He is under a lot of pressure. But I still stand by this, that he is in the same tier of draft prospects to me. Patrick Peterson, Ja'Marr Chase, Joe Burrow were on different levels when it comes to being a draft prospect. All right? He is in that tier. I think he's going to be that good of a pro. Cliff says, name 9-1. No. I wasn't saying Odell wasn't top 10. I was saying he wasn't a top 10 receiver of the past decade in the NFL. Or is he? I mean, let's see, past decade. So, you know, his career started. It's been about 10 years. So 2013 to now. Okay. Mike Evans better? Or no, Odell was 2014. Clyde's 2014, but we'll do 2013 to increase the sample. Mike Evans has had a better career. Obviously, Calvin Johnson played, or did he in the past decade? Antonio Brown was better. DeAndre Hopkins better. Tyreek Hill better. Devontae Adams better. Cooper Kupp better. But then he's probably in like that next region. Okay. This is not Power Hour NFL, but I love talking the NFL. Is the wide receiver bubble about to burst? There's like 20 top 10 wide receivers or more just coming in the ready every year. I want Jamar to hurry up and sign his contract. If I was Jamar Chase, I would not step on the field again. I wouldn't. Because is he way better than T. Higgins? I actually do believe he is way better than T. Higgins. Some people feel that gap is closer. I do think he's way better. Like, if I were to use an example, I think, like, Jamar Chase, he's not the absolute best receiver, but he's, I don't know, Shea Gilgeous-Alexander in terms of the NFL hierarchy of wide receivers. I feel T. Higgins is probably very, very good, but, you know, like an all-star-ish level player, probably the same quality of a player like a Carl Anthony Towns, right? That's still, to me, a pretty sizable gap, right, between those two players. And I feel that. But I also think, let's just say Jamar Chase didn't play this year. I think the Bengals, with Joe Burrow being as good as he is, they'll still find a way to be good offensively. Now, they wouldn't be as good without Jamar Chase. And then you got to ask the question, is it worth giving him all this money? So if I am a wide receiver, knowing what the contracts look like now, and knowing that the supply far outreaches the demand, I am locking up a deal as quickly as I possibly can. That's why Brandon Ayuk, you know, people are calling Brandon Ayuk an asshole. If you were in Brandon Ayuk's position right now, you would be doing the same damn thing. You would be doing the same damn thing. If you're in CeeDee Lamb's position, can he take a couple million less just to get the deal done? Sure, that's what I would do. But, you know, they're worth it. I think all three of those guys are worth paying them. I do. So it is interesting, because the Chiefs have won two Super Bowls without who some would consider the best wide receiver of the past decade in Tyreek Hill. They won two Super Bowls. A lot of those Brady teams that won Super Bowls, you know, their best receivers, I mean, they had Randy Moss, but Julian Edelman, Deion Branch, they're winning Super Bowls with Chris Hogan. I do think having an elite tight end is undervalued, though. I think it is very undervalued. Okay? Perfect example. You take a look at the underdog fantasy ADP, and you look at the draft market of who these people spend thousands upon thousands upon thousands of dollars playing, doing drafts. The top five tight ends are all on winning teams, right? Mark Andrews, Ravens. Travis Kelce, Chiefs. We'll see what Dalton Kincaid does, but he's on the Bills. George Kittle, 49ers. I think an elite tight end is so critical. I also, well, it's not a necessity, but it's critical. I also think that is more valuable than an elite wide receiver. Now, it depends on who it is, but if I am Jamar Chase, I am not stepping on that field. Not until I get what Jefferson got. Maybe a little less. All right, we'll go through Amicant's list. Devery Henderson, no. Not close. Skylar Green, not close. DJ Chark. No, can't get there. BTJ, can't get there. Neighbors, Jefferson Chase, I can get there. Dwayne Bowe, I can get there, yes. LaRon Landry. And what I mean by I can get there, you can make an argument over one guy or the other. Henderson, you can't. No, it's just not. And Devery was great, all right? Most famous LSU catch. Skylar Green, really good player. DJ Odell is better than DJ Chark. It's probably not as wide as people would think between the two and the reputation between the two, but there's, I think DJ Chark sitting here would tell you the same thing. You know, I saw, you know, when we were doing the blue chip study yesterday, I saw someone called Malachi Dupree, someone who massively underachieved at LSU. And that's just not true. That is just not true. Malachi Dupree had two 40-catch seasons. He had two 40-catch seasons at LSU. And 40 does not sound like a lot. But that means you are averaging over 3 yards per catch in a Les Miles offense with Brandon Harris and Anthony Jennings. Okay. Now, was he as good as all the other elite five stars, like freaking Ruben Randall and those guys? No, but he was still good. Malachi Dupree was a success at LSU. All right. I that was something I just kind of forgot. And I understand I come off at times a little like pro LSU on some guys. Well, you know, we're all LSU fans, but I'll keep it real. I'll keep it real. Dwayne, like for instance, you see back-to-back 40 catch seasons. It doesn't look great, but 40 is hard. 40 is really, really, really hard. Let's go to Carson. Thank you so much for your big super chat here. Biggest one in the night. We'll keep it going. I was getting ready to sign off too, but I don't mind. And you pick my favorite. This is top five LSU topics I love to get into. And I always bring up Terrence Tolliver. And I feel his record is going to be broken. And it's ironic, the 40-catch record. There's not been an out-of-state wide receiver at LSU that had more than 40 catches in a season since Terrence Tolliver. Last one, five-star out of Texas. But, man, Terrence Tolliver does not get his flowers enough. Does not get his flowers enough. He is forgotten about in the annals of LSU history. And he will be forgotten about because there's just too many players. But that is not going to happen on PHL. Now, this happens to media members, and they don't want to admit it, but guys that they actually cover are guys that they're actually going to stoop for. Right? That's why, you know, in the Pro Football Focus Hall of Fame votes, there are so many beat reporters that try to be objective, but they bang the table for the guy that they saw every day in practice. But when you actually zoom things out with Terrence Tolliver, he had the same thing happen to him that happened to Malachi Dupree, five-star receiver who was very good. I think Terrence Tolliver was way better than Malachi Dupree. Stats don't really show that, but he was. And he had to do it with Jordan Jefferson and Jared Lee for three seasons. Played some as a true freshman on the Natty team. And, man, the one thing I'll say about Terrence Tolliver, and a lot of us are like this, we don't necessarily care about numbers as much. Most people in sports remember moments. You remember periods of time. All right? And, like, for instance, USA basketball winning the gold medal was so freaking great. But they also had the extra gusto that they won in the fashion that they won, with Steph Curry hitting some of the most highest difficult competitive basketball shots we have ever seen. So winning close games and doing extraordinary things when the game is close is something that I do value. Now, some players say, hey, every play is every play, but Terrence Tolliver, there are so many close, big moment plays he made. The 2010 Tennessee fiasco. Terrence Tolliver caught a 3rd and 9 and a 4th and 12 or something like that to move the sticks. Then later that year versus Florida, the Josh Jasper field goal kick. He had the game-winning touchdown on a fade. And he routed the hell up of, it was a Janoris Jenkins who played in the NFL a long time. He destroyed him all night. Destroyed him with Jared Lee at quarterback. Who's good, but you know it's not Burrow back there. Okay. So, Terrence Tolliver, I'm glad you mentioned it. I could talk about him all day. I know Terrence. I've spoken to him a few times since LSU. And I was a little perplexed that he didn't stay in the NFL long enough to really be remembered. And you know, he had a decent career in the CFL. Now he coaches. The dude was so undervalued. So undervalued. You know, it feels like a year earlier, and he was a year two wide receiver for Matt Flynn, you would be viewing him a lot different because he would have been a bigger piece of the 2017. Okay. Jared Lee to Tolliver beat Auburn. In what was that? That was 2012? No, that was 2000. He also had that insane Washington game in Washington. So, yeah, I thought that was Bielefeld. I was at that game. Oh, wait. Jordan-Hare is a very good stadium. So, you know, he's just – I'm super glad you super chatted. There are so many good LSU football players we never even talk about. Like, I'm trying to think of another one in that area. Well, I've been bad about this. Let's take a look at the poll question. Who is your favorite LSU center in the modern era? I mean, I should have said outside of Lloyd Cushenberry, who's going to win this? Mine is actually Brett Helms. That's my favorite center. I would love to meet Brett. Or I've met Brett. Let me see. Okay. I'm gonna look this up really quickly. Yeah, it was Brandon LaFell. One no T, but his name was Demetrius Byrd. I was at that game too. But I mean, ultimately, you got to go Lloyd Cushenberry, man. Well, you don't have to. Ben Wilkerson was good. Ethan Poster was good. So many good ones. Now, since Carson super chatted, we can keep it going all night. So, in the next 10 to 15, if you super chat, we'll keep it moving. Y'all, I had some anxiety earlier tonight, so before the live stream, I went to a going away dinner with my niece, okay? And now we're all together. And I walked into the living room of my my wife's sister's house. It's my niece on their side. Okay. And it was so much stuff. They're moving her into her dorm this weekend. It was so much stuff. Offense would definitely win because you'd have Joe Burrow in a 7-on-7 setting. Sure. Plus you have to factor this in Pegasus. If you do this theoretical, obviously LSU has got plenty of DBs to hold up. So, but that 7-on-7 would be Devin White. And who's the other, who would be the other linebacker? Probably Patrick Queen, because, you know, 7-on-7 with coverage. Your nickel would be Tyron, Patrick Peterson, Derek Stingley on the other side. If we're factoring peaks, factoring careers, probably Morris Claiborne or Derek Stingley. Or you can go Dante Jackson. I could do that. And then at safety, since it is 7-on-7, I wouldn't pick Jamal Adams. I would pick – I would probably go – Chad Jones and I would lean Delpit. I wouldn't want Jamal Adams in a 7-on-7 setting. Now, if we're doing 11-on-11, I would want Jamal Adams over one of those guys. And then your offense, you can pick any offense you want. Tight end is probably still Mason Taylor. And I don't know. Yeah, normally when I say modern era, post-2000, but Kevin Mawai is probably the best. Interior lineman. Kevin Mawai or Alan Faneca. Kadron Boone, baby. What's good? The pride of Ocala, Florida, Kadron Boone. Yes. 7-on-7 setting, you want Clyde Edwards-Helaire. You want the best receiver out of the backfield. And that is him. But your wide receivers, I mean, it's down. You can honestly... I do think if you were to do this... obviously, if it's 7-on-7, you wouldn't want a tight end. You would just want four wides, okay? So if that's the case, you're probably, I don't know. I don't know what I'm doing there. I think it comes down to five of those guys for four spots, and you can place them any way you want to, okay? Let's see here. Oh, now that's sexy. Maybe that's what you should do. If you want to, if it's 7-on-7, if you want to have the best pass defense out there, wouldn't you want to move Tyrann Mathieu to safety to get an extra like elite coverage guy out there? You're probably right about that. The issue with that, Pegasus, is he, when you asked me to do this, I did them as their LSU era guys, right? So, like, for instance, if we factor in the NFL careers, then Morris Claiborne is not close. Not close. All right. Dante Jackson, of course, would have it over him and a few others. Obviously, Derek Stingley is going to be really good. Josh Reed was very good, obviously. Russell Shepard would better QB play. I love it, Alan. Once again, anytime anyone mentions Russell Shepard, Russell actually is a friend. I saw him actually for the first time at the at an LSU game. I talked to him for 20 minutes. And he is probably my favorite post-LSU career. And for those that don't know, he invested a good chunk of his money that he made in the NFL. Remember, he played in the league 7 years. So, I mean, he was already a millionaire. And he honestly just put it all in a waste management business. And now he is very, very successful in Texas. It would not shock me when it's all said and done that him and Joe Burrow are probably the richest LSU football players of all time. Joe Burrow, obviously on the field, he probably has another 10 years if health continues. And that's, he's going to accrue a lot of money. But I could see what Russell Shepard is doing, getting bought out by some major corporation for like $30 million or something like that. Or it'd have to be more than that to be Burrow. But that's crazy. Like, when you think about it, so many like athletes post-career want to be, you know, media. And that's great. But what you should do is get a recession-proof business. Because people are always going to go to concerts and they're always going to have to use a bathroom. And there is nothing. There's nothing that feels better than finding a porta potty to get out of Mardi Gras piss. That's part of the reason why I don't really go to Mardi Gras anymore. It is hard to find porta potties. When you finally find one and get in that thing, you feel like your life has been saved. And it's changed my mind towards business. What do people need? Well, every single person needs to use a bathroom. Shawty, good to see you. And that's going to do it for me. Appreciate our top super chatter of the evening. It's Mr. Carson along with J Red. See if I. Big thanks to John Eads. Fun, fun, fun chat. Okay. We will be live again on Sunday. Now, Alan, I appreciate it, man. You're very active in the chat tonight. Shout out to Russell Shepard. If you want to support what we're doing here on PHL, one way you could do it is go to Power Hour NFL and just let all my videos play. People are loving the Power Hour NFL videos. And the funny thing about it is they are shot just like all the LSU videos we do, the exact same way. I also do it on Power Hour SEC, dropped another Arkansas video today. I will be really hammering on Power Hour SEC, Arkansas, and Tennessee, and I will be spreading it out to other teams as the season moves on. So please go watch all those videos. And guess what? I did a Jaden Daniels film study. You will love it. Also, I saw, you know, Preston Guy talking about this recently on Twitter. I love Preston. One of the most important things to do, because we are bringing in, announcing a new partner. In fact, we actually closed a pretty big deal today with our newest PHL partner. Now, we've not publicly announced it yet because we want to do a spot, but he made some money today with his business, and I'll let him talk about it when he jumps on. But please go to nooffseason.com. Let the people at nooffseason.com tag them on Twitter. Let them know how much you're loving it, because those guys put food on my table. Same thing with NOPOD. If you are, quote, on the fence about fixing a fence or tree removal, anything home improvement related, if you just want to clean up the house, please call NOPOD. Please do. Okay? Because when they get calls and they hear that they heard it from me, guess what they do? They give me more money. There's a number, 504-810-8744. Yeah, Sibley. It's something really cool. It's actually I won't give this away. We'll talk to you Sunday night. It is Pow Out LSU Boom. And tonight we are doing we're getting some fresh pound cake. Let's go.